"Will I get the data?" she asked quietly. Blake nodded.
"Yes, I'm afraid you'll have to," he answered.
The local bureau team in Spokane had worked hard through the night and gotten good cooperation from a construction business and a crane hire operation and a trucking crew and an air cargo operator. The construction workers tore Allison Lamar's bathroom apart and disconnected the plumbing. Bureau crime scene specialists wrapped the whole tub in heavy plastic while the builders took out the window and removed the end wall down to floor level. The crane crew fixed canvas slings under the wrapped tub and brought their hook in through the hole in the end of the building and eased the heavy load out into the night. It swung through the chill air and dropped slowly down to a wooden crate lashed to a flatbed truck idling on the road. The truckers pumped expanding foam into the crate to cushion the cargo and nailed the lid down tight and drove straight to the airport in Spokane. The crate was loaded into a waiting plane and flown direct to Andrews Air Force Base, where a helicopter collected it and took it on down to Quantico. Then it was offloaded by a forklift and set down gently in a laboratory loading bay and left waiting there for an hour while the Bureau's forensic experts figured out exactly how to proceed.
"At this point, the cause of death is all I want," Blake said.
He was sitting on one side of a long table in the pathology conference room, three buildings and five floors away from the behavioral science facility. Harper was sitting next to him, and then Poulton next to her, and then Reacher at the end of the row. Opposite them was Quantico's senior pathologist, a doctor called Stavely, which was a name Reacher thought he recognized from somewhere. Clearly the guy had some kind of a famous reputation. Everybody was treating him with deference. He was a large, red-faced man, oddly cheerful. His hands were big and red and looked clumsy, although presumably they weren't. Next to him was his chief technician, a quiet, thin man who looked preoccupied.
"We read the stuff from your other cases," Stavely said, and stopped.
"Meaning?" Blake asked.
"Meaning I'm not exactly filled with optimism," Stavely said. "New Hampshire is a little remote from the action, I agree, but they see plenty down in Florida and California. I suspect if there was anything to find, you'd know about it by now. Good people down there."
"Better people up here," Blake said.
Stavely smiled.
"Flattery will get you anywhere, right?"
"It's not flattery."
Stavely was still smiling.
"If there's nothing to find, what could we do?"
"Gotta be something," Blake said. "He made a mistake this time with the box."
"So?"
"So maybe he made more than one mistake. Left something you'll find."
Stavely thought about it.
"Well, don't hold your breath, is all I'm saying."
Then he stood up abruptly and knitted his thick fingers together and flexed his hands, turned to his technician.
"So, are we ready?"
The thin guy nodded.
"We're assuming the paint will be dried hard on the top surface, maybe an inch, inch and a half. If we cut it away from the tub enamel all round, we should be able to slide a body bag in and scoop her out."
"Good," Stavely said. "Keep as much paint around her as you can. I don't want her disturbed."
The technician hurried out, and Stavely followed him, evidently assuming the other four would file out behind him, which they did, with Reacher last in line. The pathology lab was no different from the others Reacher had seen. It was a large, low space, brightly lit by an illuminated ceiling. The walls and the floor were tiled with white tiles. In the middle of the room was a large examination table sculpted from gleaming steel. The table had a drain canal pressed into the center. The drain was plumbed straight into a steel pipe running down through the floor. The table was surrounded by a cluster of wheeled carts loaded with tools. Hoses hung from the ceiling. There were cameras on stands and scales and extractor hoods. There was a low hum of ventilation and a strong smell of disinfectant. The air was still and cold.
"Gowns and gloves," Stavely said.
He pointed to a steel cupboard filled with folded nylon gowns and boxes of disposable latex gloves. Harper handed them out.
Probably won't need masks, Staveley said. My guess is the paint will be the worst thing we will smell.
They smelled it as soon as the gurney came in through the door. The technician was pushing it, and the body bag lay on it, bloated and slick and smeared with green. Paint seeped from the closure and ran down the steel legs to the wheels and left parallel tracks across the white tile. The technician walked between the tracks. The gurney rattled and the bag rolled and wobbled like a giant balloon filled with oil. The technician's arms were smeared with paint to his shoulders.
"I'll take her to X-ray first," Staveley said.
The guy steered the gurney in a new direction and headed for a closed room off the side of the lab. Reacher stepped ahead and pulled the door for him. It felt like it weighed a ton.
"Lined with lead," Staveley said. "We really zap them in there. Big, big doses, so we can see everything we want to see. Not like we have to worry about their long-term health, is it?"
The technician was gone for a moment, and then he stepped back into the lab and eased the heavy door closed behind him. There was a distant, powerful hum which lasted a second and then stopped. He went back and came out pushing the gurney again. It was still making tracks across the tile. He stopped it alongside the examination table.
"Roll her off," Staveley said. "I want her face down."
The technician stepped beside him and leaned across the table and grasped the nearer edge of the bag with both hands and lifted it half off the gurney, half onto the table. Then he walked around to the other side and took the other edge and flipped it up and over. The bag flopped, zipper side down, and the mass inside it sucked and rolled and wobbled and settled. Paint oozed out onto the polished steel. Staveley looked at it and beyond it to the floor, which was all crisscrossed with green tracks.
"Overshoes, people," he said. "It'll get everywhere."
They stepped away, and Harper found pairs of plastic footwear in a locker and handed them out. Reacher slipped his on and stepped back and watched the paint. It seeped out through the zipper like a thick, slow tide.
"Get the film," Staveley said.
The technician ducked back to the X-ray room and came out with large gray squares of film which mapped Alison Lamar's body. He handed them to Staveley. Staveley fanned through them and held them up against the light from the ceiling.
"Instant," he said, "like Polaroid, the benefits of scientific progress."
He shuffled them like a dealer and separated one of them and held it up, ducked away to a light box on the wall and hit the switch and held the film against the light with his big fingers splayed.
"Look at that," he said.
It was a photograph of the midsection from just below the sternum to just above the pubic area. Reacher saw the outlines of ghostly gray bones, ribs, spine, pelvis, with a forearm and a hand lying across them at an angle, and another shape, dense and so bright it shone pure white. Metal, slim and pointed, about as long as the hand.
"A tool of some sort," Staveley said.
"The others didn't have anything like that," Poulton said.
"Doc, we need to see it right away," Blake said. "It's important."
Staveley shook his head.
"It's underneath her body right now because she's upside down. We'll get there, but it won't be real soon."
"How long?"
"Long as it takes," Staveley said. "This is going to be messy as hell."
He clipped the gray photographs in sequence on the light box. Then he walked the length of the ghostly display and studied them.
"Her skeleton is relatively undamaged," he said.
He pointed to the second panel.
"Left wrist was cracked and healed probably 10 years ago."
"She was into sports," Reacher said. "Her sister told us."
Staveley nodded.
"So we'll check the collarbone."
He moved left and studied the first panel. It showed the skull and the neck and the shoulders. The collarbones gleamed and swooped down toward the sternum.
"A small crack," Stavely said, pointing. "It's what I'd expect. An athlete with a cracked wrist will usually have a cracked collarbone, too. They fall off their bike or their rollerblades or whatever, throw out their arm to break their fall, end up breaking their bones instead."
"But no fresh injuries?" Blake asked.
Stavely shook his head.
"These are 10 years old, maybe more. She wasn't killed by blunt trauma, if that's what you mean."
He hit the switch and the light behind the X-rays went out. He turned back to the examination table and knitted his fingers again, and his knuckles clicked in the silence.
"Okay," he said. "Let's go to work."
He pulled a hose from a reel mounted on the ceiling and turned a small faucet built into its nozzle. There was a hissing sound and a stream of clear liquid started running. A heavy, slow liquid with a sharp, strong smell.
"Acetone," Stavely said. "Gotta clear this damn paint."
He used the acetone sluice on the body bag and on the steel table. The technician used handfuls of kitchen towel, wiping the bag and pushing the thick liquid into the drain. The chemical stink was overpowering.
"Ventilator," Stavely said.
The technician ducked away and twisted a switch behind him, and the fans in the ceiling changed up from a hum to a louder roar. Stavely held the nozzle closer, and the bag began to turn from wet green to wet black. Then he held the hose low down on the table and set up a swirling rinse under the bag straight into the drain.
"Okay, scissors," he said.
The technician took scissors from a cart and snipped a corner of the bag. Green paint flooded out. The acetone swirl caught it, and it eddied sluggishly to the drain. It kept on coming, 2 minutes, 3, 5. The bag settled and drooped as it emptied. The room went quieter under the roar of the fan and the hiss of the hose.
"Okay, the fun starts here," Stavely said.
He handed the hose to the technician and used a scalpel from the cart to slit the bag lengthwise from end to end. He made sideways cuts, top and bottom, and peeled the rubber back slowly. It lifted and sucked away from skin. He folded it back in 2 long flaps. Alison Lamar's body was revealed, lying face down, slimy and slick with paint. Stavely used the scalpel and slit the rubber around the feet, up alongside the legs, around the contours of the hips, up her flanks, close to her elbows, around her shoulders and head. He pulled away the strips of rubber until the bag was gone, all except for the front surface, which was trapped between the crust of paint and the steel of the table. The crust of paint was top down to the table, because she was upside down. Its underside was bubbled and jellified. It looked like the surface of a distant alien planet. Stavely started rinsing its edges, where it was stuck to her skin.
"Won't that damage her?" Blake asked.
Stavely shook his head.
"It's the same stuff as nail polish remover."
The skin turned greenish-white where the paint washed off. Stavely used his gloved fingertips to peel the crust away. The strength in his hands moved the body. It lifted and fell slackly. He pushed the hose underneath her, probing for stubborn adhesions. The technician stood next to him and lifted her legs. Stavely reached under them and cut the crust and the rubber together, peeling it away up to her thighs. The acetone ran continuously, rinsing the green stream into the drain. Stavely moved up to the head, placed the hose against the nape of her neck, and watched as the chemical flooded her hair. Her hair was a nightmare. It was matted and crusted with paint. It had floated up around her face like a stiff, tangled cage.
"I'm going to have to cut it," he said.
Blake nodded, somber.
"I guess so," he said.
"She had nice hair," Harper said.
Her voice was quiet under the noise from the fan. She half turned and backed off a step. Her shoulder touched Reacher's chest. She left it there a second longer than she needed to. Stavely took a fresh scalpel from the cart and traced through the hair as close to the paint crust as he could get. He slid a powerful arm under the shoulders and lifted. The head came free, leaving hair matted into the crust like mangrove roots tangled into a swamp. He cut through the crust and the rubber and pulled another section free.
"I hope you catch this guy," he said. "That's the plan," Blake said back, still somber. "Roll her over," Stavely said.
She moved easily. The acetone mixed with the slick paint was like a lubricant against the dish steel of the table. She slid face up and lay there, ghastly under the lights. Her skin was greenish-white and puckered, stained and blotched with paint. Her eyes were open, the lids rimed with green. She wore the last remaining square of the body bag stuck to her skin from her breasts to her thighs, like an old-fashioned bathing suit protecting her modesty. Stavely probed with his hand and found the metal implement under the rubber. He cut through the bag and wormed his fingers inside and pulled the object out in a grotesque parody of surgery.
"A screwdriver," he said.
The technician washed it in an acetone bath and held it up. It was a quality tool with a heavy plastic handle and a handsome chromed steel shaft with a crisp blade.